5,000 people in the stands, and it would have been butt cheek to butt cheek if the COVID-19 pandemic would not have been here.
Right.
But again, just a phenomenal display by Jim Nagy and the job that his crew and staff did. Only one positive COVID test with everyone that came through Mobile, Alabama that was involved in the game. So it was great.
Thousands of tests. They tested daily. And, I mean, it was just like it was as top-notch as the entire NFL production for testing and making sure the players were safe over the course of the year, except all of that was done in 1 week, and I think a lot more had to go into it. But hats off to Jim Nagy. I guess I'm just getting in line because so many people have said that over this last week, but he did an outstanding job putting the whole thing together, and it ended up being a really good game. You know, I'm always surprised sometimes when I hop on some of my favorite websites that offer certain things where you, like, pick a side, and then somehow they have some of your money, and then you say, you know, I want to put this much money on one side or the other. Forget what they call that. But I did that on Saturday, got online. There it was, the lines for the Senior Bowl, and they had the American team favored. And actually, it moved prior to the game. It was kind of like a just above a pick 'em to start. I think the American team was favored by just a point. And then it kept moving in their direction. And, you know, me being right down here in Mobile with some insider access, not really. The national team quarterbacks, to me, I knew Mac Jones probably wasn't going to play for the American team. Then the other two, you have Jamie Newman, who was at Wake Forest, transferred to Georgia, but not really because he bowed out before the season started. And you had Kellen Mond, who I've never been too high on as a quarterback. I think he's a great guy, but never been very high on him as a quarterback. And I looked over at the other side, the national team, and you have Ian Book, Sam Ellinger, and Felipe Franks, known for his games at Arkansas and Florida. And so my bet, which I won, was strictly based on the quarterbacks that I thought would be playing the game. It ended up being tighter than I thought it would, and I would have not guessed that Kellen Mond would end up being called the MVP of the game, even being on the losing side. But the national team won 27-24. You had touchdown passes from Ellinger and Felipe. Franks, that is. Also a running touchdown from Michael Carter from UNC. I think he really upped his draft stock this week, and that's something we'll ask Brian Bosarge about coming up next segment. But Kellen Mond, 173 yards passing and two touchdowns. Lots of drops in the game. And I, especially in a game like that, you know, you never want to see a receiver drop a pass. But when their career is on the line and you see them drop easy passes right over the middle, you have to wonder what's kind of going through their heads. I know Des Fitzpatrick, who ended up winning the offensive player of the game, they said it a million times if they said it once on Saturday, toe drag swag on that first catch, where I really didn't think he had his feet in until I saw the slow motion catch there on a pretty important third down early on. He had the best game easily of any receiver, but even he dropped at least a couple passes right over the middle. Did you notice that? Seemed like a lot of dropped passes.
And the thing is, you had to think that Des Fitzpatrick, the wide receiver from Louisville, made his money throughout the week. And you hated that Kadarius Toney did not play, and he made that decision along with Mac Jones both, that you didn't get the chance to see those explosive players play. But you're right, there were a lot of drops. Even though Fitzpatrick had six receptions for 90 yards, his longest being that toe tap of 29 yards, which was very spectacular, there were some guys that you know and you hoped throughout the week made their money Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday during those practice times. And in game is not as important.
Right.
But for
none of the
like,
coaches are even there at that
no,
point.
No, I agree. They go back and look at the game film. It helps Kellen Mond. It helped people like Dak Prescott, who was ultimately a fourth-round pick, I do believe, and was the Senior Bowl MVP. It helps people like that to have a great in-game performance. But other people throughout the week really is where you make your money.
Yeah, and I loved – you said would have been butt-cheek to butt-cheek, which I got to say is one of my favorite sayings there. If there had been no pandemic, it would have been a full crowd. But I still heard them shouting when Riley Cole was on the field making plays. K.J. Britt was out there making plays, two of the best linebackers in the entire game. So we'll ask Brian Bosarge about that coming up, how he feels about their futures and their NFL prospects. Well, we have three South Alabama Jaguars playing on Sundays come next year. I think it's very possible. Also, we got to get to this news before we actually move on, and the huge NFL trade from Saturday night. I guess we all knew this was coming, and Schefter tried to warn us, didn't he?
Yeah,
said a week ago that he thinks there's going to be a lot of changes behind center in the NFL this offseason, and the first huge domino has dropped. One of the first ever trades involving number one overall picks, at least in a very long time. Stafford, quarterback, originally from Georgia. He's, of course, played in football. I don't know. I'm trying to think of something clever to say. Not a great city to play football in with the Detroit Lions. And he is finally moving on to a team that should at least, at the very minimum, be in the playoffs next year. The LA Rams pick him up. They get rid of Jared Goff and really had to pay heavily in order to get rid of that Goff contract. They send Goff to Detroit along with a third-round pick this year and first-rounders in 2022 and 2023. Now, what's been said about Stafford over his career? He's got a heck of an arm. He's got a live arm and really good decision-maker, but he's never played with a top defense. I think the one season he did play with a top-10 defense, they went 11-5, and he's never really had much of a running game. There's been no Barry Sanders in Detroit since Barry Sanders left, and that kind of changes for him in L.A. At the very least, he's going to have a really good defense. And then Cam Akers came on strong last year. We'll get to see what Stafford is really made of this coming season.
I like the trade, but I think it definitely favors the Rams and Stafford, because Stafford probably has another 7 to 8 years of football in him left. And I think under this system, he will flourish. And like you said, it's the motorless city in Detroit right now.
I was looking for something clever like that.
There you go. It's the motorless city in the way that they played football and the revolving door of head coaches that have gone through there. And they just need some stability in that organization. And maybe by changing quarterbacks, that will happen for them. But I think when you're talking about what they gave up, what the Lions gain ultimately is going to help them down the road, very similar to the Dolphins' plot and ploy a year ago to get Tua and other draft picks here coming up in the future. It's definitely not a win-now franchise for Detroit.
And L.A. is certainly in that camp now, win-now, because remember they gave up a bunch of first picks for Ramsey just a couple years ago. They're going to be without a first-round pick for a while now, and Stafford not getting any younger. Of course, he could have some years left, but I have a feeling Goff and that new coach in Detroit, Dan Campbell, aren't going to get along to, you know, bite him at the kneecaps guy.
Yeah.
Goff doesn't seem to have that same level of intensity, so we'll see. But still one more NFL game to talk about before we move on to the offseason. Coming up, Brian Bosarge, deepfrieddraft.com. We'll talk about your favorite players. Give us a text, 343-0106.
Can I kick it? Can I kick it? Can I kick it?
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig, Corey LeBounty, Ian Blair on the ones and twos this Monday night, and post-Senior Bowl edition of the show. I am so happy that we were able to get this game played, and I'll continue to promote him. But Jim Nagy, the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, once again, an outstanding job making sure that this went off without a hitch, and read a few articles over the weekend from some national guys that were out of town and come to town every year for this. And they did use the words ghost town in some of them, where they were saying, like, downtown Mobile was like a ghost town. I want to say, you know, have you been to other cities during this pandemic? We're still doing stuff here. There's people still going to bars and restaurants, but certainly a different Senior Bowl experience. And a huge difference this year is that it was not played at Ladd Peebles Stadium. It was played at Hancock Whitney, and I know, Corey, you were out there on Saturday, and our next guest was also on hand at the Senior Bowl on Saturday, Brian Bosarge, Deep Fried Draft on Twitter, also deepfrieddraft.com. He analyzes, watches the tape, and watches the games on Saturdays, and then ranks them and gets them ready for the NFL. Brian, thank you so much for coming on with Corey and myself tonight.
Hey, man, it's a pleasure to be on with you guys.
So, first off, I'll ask you a softball question like I did Corey last segment. What did you think of the overall game day experience at Hancock Whitney? I know it was popping on TV.
It was awesome. I was on the radio call for Clear Channel and for 99.5, the Sports Talk, so your rival station, I assume. But, you know, we were on the radio call for that, man. That was my first time, you know, being in the press box of the stadium, so that was pretty awesome. I was at the actually Tuesday, the first day of practice, my first time being in the stadium since it opened. And, man, it was eye-opening, you know, how beautiful it looks in person.
So let's talk about, and you did the article, Risers and Fallers from the week of the Senior Bowl. Now, when I was a kid, you know, I thought the Senior Bowl game is what it was all about. And as I've grown up, I've realized there's a reason that GMs and coaches leave before the game on Saturday. It's really all about the practice. And each day on your website, deepfrieddraft.com, and on Twitter, you kept up with the risers and fallers and who was looking good and who wasn't out at practice. Who were your champions of the week, would you say? Who made their most money during the week of Senior Bowl practice? Just give us a few guys.
Well, you almost have to start with the quarterback position, and that, to me, starts with Mac Jones. I had a big question coming into this week. Could Mac Jones make some tight window throws, you know, that, you know, throws he'll have to make at the NFL level, throws he really didn't have to make at Alabama because everybody was running wide open all season long. And during practice this week, I saw him make those throws. I saw him command the practice. He was easily the best quarterback of either team throughout practice. It's a shame he didn't get to play in the game Saturday, you know, because the fans were sort of chanting his name there. But I got a little restless during the game. You know, he was suited up. Looked like he was going in, but he never did. Mm-hmm. And I didn't expect him to after seeing him ding his foot up a little bit in the last bit of Thursday's practice. But I thought Mac Jones, you know, probably handled himself well. Another local guy, Kadarius Toney, great job all week. Couldn't really be covered in practice. He's another guy that, you know, didn't play in the game. But Toney had some drops on Wednesday, which was just concentration issues, something, you know, you can clean up. And I thought some of the offensive linemen did a really good job. Some of the smaller guys, like group of five guys and some of the FCS guys, and even lower than that, like Deontay Smith from East Carolina, a guy who some thought might have been a guard going into the next level, but measures in 6'5", a little shade under 300, with 35.5-inch arms, an 85-inch wingspan. You know, that's going to make him a lot of money at the next level, probably going to move him up into that late first, you know, early to mid-second round area. Mm-hmm. Dylan Reduns from North Dakota State, offensive tackle, guy I've been high on all season long, you know, based off the 2019 tape, because he didn't play this year. But I thought he was a guy – he actually won the overall practice player of the week award for his job, voted on by his peers. And Quinn Miners, a guard from Wisconsin Whitewater, Division III.
Yeah.
This guy comes in with a mullet, wearing a crop top, looked like Britney Spears showing off his midriff out there from back in the day all week in practice. But, you know, Division III guy – comes in, doesn't look a day out of place against guys from, you know, Ohio State and Notre Dame, and just handling business all week long. Broke his wrist early in the Thursday practice and practiced the rest of the way, and lobbied, tried to get the teams to let him play in the game Saturday, and they wouldn't let him go for his own good, obviously. Right. But this guy, tough as nails. He played center for probably half his snaps this week. He had never played center in his life.
Wow.
Before this week, and it looked like he'd done it his whole life.
Oh.
So this is a guy who probably went from, at best, late day three to priority free agent, now looking like he may get, you know, in that late second, early third round range.
Brian, another player, Najee Harris, who did not participate in the game but really gave his heart and soul throughout the week, showing his versatility as he continues to do guts and the interview process along with him and Devontae Smith, leaving early but having an opportunity to impress the scouts not only with their draft status in regards to how they interviewed, but Najee actually being out there on the field. As an Alabama fan, you know you had to love that.
Right, and it's something he didn't have to do. He absolutely had no, you know, nothing really to gain. He's his draft position's the same as it was entering the week, probably at late first, early second round area, competing with Travis Etienne to be the top senior running back. But just for him to go out there and face to face with teams, because knowing that without a combine this year potentially and only pro days, you don't know how many of these teams you're going to get to meet. So he met with all 32 teams this week, as did every single player at the Senior Bowl, and that's what made this year's Senior Bowl so much more important than any in years past and maybe any in years in the future, is that this may be the only chance that some of these players get face-to-face with these NFL teams.
It's a stacked running back class now. Whether any of them make it into the first round, well, you're the guy to ask for that. You think Najee is a first-round guy, or with the way NFL teams load their teams nowadays and kind of wait on running backs, you think it'll be likely he and Etienne are maybe second-round guys?
I think that's probably the likely scenario, because you're going to get to draft night and the board's going to fluctuate differently and not how teams expect it. So maybe an offensive lineman in that 20, 25 to 30 range that a team didn't think would be there is suddenly there. So they draft him, and that pushes the running backs down. And to me, the value for running backs has almost become now second and third round is where the value is for those guys. And I think that's where you're going to get an Etienne or Najee Harris.
Yeah, because go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Because even if you look at Derrick Henry, the top pure running back in the game, he was still a second-day guy. Titans certainly struck gold with him. It seems like most teams come to regret drafting a guy early on at that position. I also like on your website, you actually ranked the players going into the week of practice, and you rated your quarterbacks, and this was before Trask bowed out, Kyle Trask, the Heisman finalist out of Florida. But let's talk about those top two guys and some of the quarterbacks that weren't able to come down to Mobile. You have Kyle Trask and Mac Jones. You had Trask rated ahead of Jones going into the week of practice, but Trevor Lawrence, I think a sure thing at number one. You also have Zach Young out of BYU and the kid out of North Dakota State. How do you the Ohio State quarterback Fields? How do you have those fives rated right now going into the April draft?
Coming out right now, I have Trevor Lawrence at number one, and it's not even close to number two to me. He's a distant second above anybody else that's going to go ahead of him, even though, you know, Justin Fields or Zach Wilson, depending on, you know, who a team likes, is probably going to end up as a number two pick, but I don't think they're anywhere near the value right now that Trevor Lawrence is. But I currently have, based on just tape alone, I have Justin Fields two, Zach Wilson, BYU 3. Then I have Kyle Trask and Mac Jones dead even now. I have them basically tied for fourth on my board. And their tape score and production score both for me are exactly the same. So now I'm just waiting for any kind of athletic testing I can to break the tie so for them. And I'm lower on Trey Lance than most because while I think his potential may be just as high as anybody not named Trevor Lawrence in this draft class, but the bust potential for him to me is a bit too much to grasp. He really only has 1 year of tape. Now that was phenomenal, but it was at FCS. So it's like, how much can you glean off of that? And then followed up, I have, you know, you start getting into your early day three guys like Ian Book and Kellen Mond and so on.
Very cool. Well, we'll break down some more of the quarterbacks. Also, some wide receivers made some money this week. We'll talk with Brian Bosarge about that when we get back. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5, and Draft Talk continues when we get back right here on FM Talk 106.5. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig, Corey Labounty, Ian Blair with you, and continuing our conversation with Brian Bosarge, Deep Fried Draft on Twitter, also deepfrieddraft.com. And we're talking Senior Bowl, and I want to continue the conversation about the quarterbacks for a minute here, Brian. We talked about the guys we're expecting to see in round one, but there were certainly some day two and day three and maybe no day guys out there on Saturday. Ian Book, he's a guy I've had trouble figuring out exactly what his future might hold. Is he a potential career backup in the NFL, or does he have starter capabilities, you think?
I think you're probably right along the lines of career backup, you know, with the chance to come in and spot start for a game or two if need be. I mean, he's got a good command of the offense. He's smart. He can move the pocket. He can make plays off script, which you like to see. But he doesn't have the big arm. He doesn't, you know, he's not the most accurate quarterback out there. But he can read a defense and make enough plays. Like, if you had to start him for two games, you'd feel fairly confident you could go 1-1.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, I was talking off the air to Dalton about you love to make comparisons as a draft analyst with players? Who does he play like? Who does he look like? What is his build? And a lot of people made the Mac Jones comparison to Tom Brady when they were initially Brady came out of Michigan. And I think their build is similar. And I think personally that Mac Jones can have the type of career as far as longevity wise that Tom Brady has had. Maybe not at the success of 7 Super Bowls out of 55 that have been played. But I think that comparison is fair. What do you think?
I like to compare quarterbacks like Mac Jones, like Kyle Trask, to me, even though they're not built or even athletically similar, but I think their transition to the NFL is similar to that of Andy Dalton. And I compare it to the I saw this earlier. I can't take credit for starting this, but it's basically, are you the truck or are you the trailer? Guys like Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, those guys are the – Patrick Mahomes, those guys are the truck. They take everybody with them. Whereas guys like Andy Dalton and I think Mac Jones, Kyle Trask, I think those players are more of the trailer. They need the help around them to get where they're going to go. And that's why, I, like I said, stylistically, I don't think they're the same at all. But I think, you know, quarterback capabilities or their ceiling, so to speak, I think are Andy Dalton. Which, I mean, hey, the guy took the Bengals to the playoffs 5 years in a row, which is nothing to sneeze at by any means, but, you know, he was never able to get them to – they could never win a playoff game, so he can only get so far.
Kadarius Toney, you know, it was unfortunate he didn't play on Saturday, but you said it earlier, he put some good reps in during the week of practice. Do you have a player comp for Kadarius Toney? I don't believe he has the straight-line speed, although you would think he was, but his quick twitch and his ability to just – move off of one spot. I mean, there's one route he ran against Ole Miss earlier this year. I think it was earlier this year where he twisted on a dime and left the guy probably 10, 15 yards in his wake. Do you have a player comp for Kadarius Toney, and could you see him being a number one in the NFL?
The guy I think he's, in terms of recent drafts, that I think Kadarius Toney plays like, in my mind, is Deebo Samuel from South Carolina, now with the 49ers. I think he's a guy that you can, you know, give the ball to in space, and that's how he's going to make his plays. He creates his own space, or you give it to him on the end around or something along those lines. I think that's who Kadarius Toney most reminds me of recently, anyway, is Deebo Samuel.
Now, defensively, the American team had Cam Sample from Tulane and Riley Cole from right of South Alabama. Cam Sample has made his living on the new field at Hancock-Whitney Stadium as he was in this Jaguar backfield the entire fourth quarter as South played Tulane earlier. And he did a great job defensively, wound up having 2 solo tackles, 7 total on the game. And Riley Cole, like you mentioned, he held his own. A guy who's from not a non-Power 5, but as soon as he made a tackle, the entire crowd knew it.
Yeah, Riley Cole did a good job, especially diagnosing and flowing to the football on Saturday. He did a solid job in practice and coverage and stuff of that nature. Riley Cole, to me, he's probably going to be testing. If he can get testing, is going to be important for him, you know, how high he can go. But I think, you know, as a fourth, fifth-round pick this year, you know, a guy who will be on the active roster every week because he's playing all 4 special teams, I think that's where he's going to cut his teeth in the NFL with a chance to stick long-term as a potential starter down the road.
And that's so important for guys that are going in that kind of range, right, to be able to play on special teams. Do you feel the same way about K.J. Britt? I know he's not a name that's being mentioned very often in the draft right now, but is he going to have to be somebody who just finds any way to stick on the team and get as much playing time as he can?
Initially, coming into the week, I thought K.J. Britt was a two-down run plugger, a guy that's basically a dinosaur in the NFL now, with a chance to, you know, potentially, you know, maybe as special teams his avenue. Kind of reminded me a little bit of the way Deshaun Davis from Auburn a couple of years ago played, and I think he's in the CFL now. But on Saturday, I was quite frankly surprised because he didn't do it in practice a whole lot during the week. But the way K.J. Britt was carrying tight ends and stuff down the field, you know, it's like, okay, maybe he can cover a little bit. Maybe I need to go back, you know, to the 19 tape because he didn't have a whole lot of 2020 tape to watch, you know, and see how he fared, you know, go back and watch a little bit more from 2019 season and see, you know, maybe he underestimated his coverage ability just a little bit.
Got a tight end question for you coming up in just a second, but from the text line, what's your thoughts on Sam Ehlinger out of Texas? Does he have any future?
I can't. Maybe in the CFL, I think he'll be perfect up there. You know, the way he plays the game with his athleticism, and but I can't see Sam Ehlinger being other than a career backup developmental guy. I mean, if you told me I could have either Felipe Franks or Sam Ehlinger off of that national team Saturday, I'm taking Felipe Franks just because of what I think he can be, as opposed to what I think Sam Ehlinger already is.
Very interesting. There were a lot of tight ends out there this week. Certainly not the top tight end, Kyle Pitts out of Florida. He's probably the most obvious name, but you look at the guys who are having the most success in the NFL now, Travis Kelce and George Kittle, they seemingly came out of nowhere. Is there any potential in any of the guys we saw Saturday or anyone else that's playing tight end to maybe be, you know, like an all-pro down the road?
I'll give you Kenny Yeboah from Ole Miss, the transfer from Temple. I wanted to see how he blocked during the week, and he checked all those boxes off for me. So I thought that, because he lined up mostly out wide at Ole Miss, and he did it Saturday out of necessity because the national team only had five receivers left because they just got hit with the injury bug or bailout from practices. But Yeboah he can go up and get it. And you remember the Alabama game this year. I mean, he just absolutely dominated the Crimson Tide defense when they played them earlier in the season. So I think Kenny Yeboah has – I'm not going to say he's Travis Kelce, but I think he has those type of qualities about his game. And I currently have him as my third overall tight end right now.
One of the wide receivers, Amari Rodgers, T. Martin's son, really made some hay and some money this week, maybe being a slot receiver at the next level. And one other linebacker, Jabril Cox from LSU, I think had a great week also.
Absolutely. Start with Amari Rodgers. He was one of several receivers this week who made a lot of money. I mean, that wide receiver to me was the deepest group of players during the practices at the Senior Bowl this week. But Amari Rodgers, great hands, terrific route runner. And I don't know how fast he's going to be. Probably, I don't know if he'll be in the low 4.5 range, but I think he's probably going to be one of those guys that'll probably be, you know, second, third round area. And I'm sorry, who was the other one?
Jabril Cox from LSU.
Oh, stud. Best linebacker on the field for both teams during practice this week. He's the new breed of linebacker you're looking for in the NFL, the guy who can make the tackles in the hole or cover tight ends or running backs out of the backfield. I love everything about his game and his size. I think he's going to test well. I think Jabril Cox is I'm not going to say he's going to get in that first round, late first round area, but I think he's definitely in the high second round.
That's interesting. We've seen some LSU linebackers make some hay in the NFL after leaving the Bayou Bengals. And we'll leave it with this question here for you, because I can't believe we've gone 30 minutes without talking about the Heisman winner. And he didn't dress up this week, but we know what he's capable of. Just your overall thoughts on Devontae Smith, and how high do you think he could possibly go come draft time?
If anything's to be believed, I mean, his ceiling is probably the third overall pick with Miami. But I'll leave you with this as the one thing that scares me about Devontae Smith. And him not weighing in on Tuesday did nothing to alleviate these concerns. But for Devontae Smith to have success at the NFL level, he has to be a generational prospect. And I say this because any receiver who has come into the NFL over 6'1 and sub 180 pounds, there's only been one drafted in the first three rounds since 1996, and that was Snoop Menace. The only one that's had success going back to 1996 is Marvin Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
So 25 years ago was the last receiver of that size to have success. Now, Marvin Harrison's a Hall of Famer.
Right.
So take that for what you will. But, I mean, I think Devontae Smith is going to be a great player, but he's an exception and not a rule here, and he's definitely an outlier if he does.
I'm glad you said Marvin Harrison. That's the one – my mind just – when I see Devontae Smith, maybe it's the size, I don't know, but I see Marvin Harrison all over again, and hopefully – for his sake and for ours that he can reach that potential. Brian, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. All kinds of great information. Really appreciate your insight. If somebody wants to follow you online and read what you're writing, how can they do so?
So follow me on Twitter at Deep Fried Draft and find everything you need at deepfrieddraft.com.
All right. We'd love to talk to you again before the draft if that's a possibility. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, anytime, guys.
That's Brian Bosard's Deep Fried Draft, deepfrieddraft.com, and some good takes there on some of the guys that were down here for the Senior Bowl, and can't believe it's already gone. Only, what, 357 more days until another Senior Bowl week here in Mobile. All right, when we come back, we got plenty more to talk about. The SEC Big 12 Challenge over the weekend, and maybe we'll get a little NBA talk in for our guy Ian over here on the board. Coming back, more Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig, Corey LeBounty, and Ian Blair with you on this Monday night. And a great conversation with Brian Bosarge. Reminder, if you miss any of the show or any past shows, you can check out the podcast online, fmtalk1065.com. Let's talk a little basketball. And I know we have the Super Bowl coming up Sunday. We all made our picks last week because we just couldn't wait. I personally took the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't think the Tom Brady season ends with a loss. Who did you? You took the Chiefs, right?
I'm going the Chiefs.
Bandwagon.
High scoring. Over, under. I think it was going to go over.
Bandwagon fan. And I can't remember, Ian, who'd you pick for the Super Bowl? We all need to be on the record for this again.
So we were going on the record, and we never swung it over to me.
Ah,
in my recollection.
Okay, yeah. So we gave you an extra week to decide.
You gave me an extra week, and so I noticed that it didn't happen. So I went home and I did my research, and I scoured for like 3 hours of free time that I had straight through this thing.
You're a worker.
So best way I can put it is this. I said it against the Saints. I said it against the Packers, and I'll say it again. Sun Tzu and the Art of War. If you know yourself and you know your enemy, you need not fear the outcome of 100 battles. I don't think the Chiefs know themselves. I don't think they really understand the secondary that they're up against. I'm going the Buccaneers 37-21 on the record.
I got a cheeseburger on the line on that one. I'm going to take a cheeseburger bill on that
one. I've got a six-pack of Gatorade.
Mm. Okay, I'll take you on that
one. Six-pack of
like
Gatorade.
That.
We're going to shake on, all right, shake on
I got
that.
You guys do that, and I'll go bet some real money on this thing. That's how I'll play it. You got that coming up, and it's interesting. You know, one more take on the Super Bowl. It's not like your normal Super Bowl week, and it's so strange. The Kansas City Chiefs will be flying in
the day before,
like it's a normal road game. Mm-hmm. I think that actually could help the Chiefs out a lot without all the fanfare around them this year. But once you actually get on the field, it's still the Super Bowl you're playing in, and you're still across the field from Tom Brady. So I'm sticking with my pick for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I want to try to get some NBA talk here in just a minute, but let's talk SEC and Big 12. They've been doing this challenge now for, nearly a decade, maybe longer, and the SEC has only won outright one time prior to this year, and they won five games. Big 12 won four on Saturday. Alabama and Auburn both fell. Now, Corey, I'll go into your wheelhouse here for a second. I felt kind of like the fouls were a little ticky-tacky on the Tide on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it was a situation to where you knew the winning streak had to come to an end. But Alabama, you want to see them jump right back into SEC play and play good in SEC play. You would have liked to see them beat Oklahoma. Oklahoma minus two of their best players, but Alabama not at 100% either. But either way it goes, a great basketball game.
Yeah, and they held Herb Jones and John Petty each had fewer than 10 points apiece, and that's going to have to change to get another streak running here. Also, Auburn, they've got the playmakers, but the inexperience really shows, especially when you're playing a team that is undefeated and ranked second in the nation. Just too many mistakes in the backcourt for the Auburn Tigers, but that team certainly has some time to grow. And then my guys, the Tennessee Vols, finally put another game together, and when they play like they did against Kansas, I think they're the best team in the SEC when they play like that.
I can't argue with you on that. I mean, besides the leadership and the veteran skills that Alabama has, the upcoming matchup, I think Tennessee and Alabama will face one another again here down the next month. So I look forward to that matchup. But you're absolutely right. They put a whooping on Kansas, and that's a huge win for the volunteer program.
And a quick shout-out to LSU for giving up just an absolute stinker of a last-minute 12-0 run for Texas Tech in the final minute of the game, and LSU goes from a sure win to a sure loss. Kind of painful to watch on Saturday.
It was unfortunate that they weren't able to get that win, but it's one that I know Coach Wade wanted, mm-hmm. but to give the game away in a challenge type of situation, I know he would much rather lose that game than a conference game, though.
I do like Trendon Watford. I'm glad he's from Alabama, but Will Wade, one of those guys I now actively root against when I see them out there playing. And in the NBA, to kind of transition here, the Brooklyn Nets have become that team for me also. You know, I like Kevin Durant. He's fine. He seems like I don't know. I like Kevin Durant. He's a great player. But the Brooklyn Nets, I'm kind of rooting against them like so many did the Golden State Warriors when Durant joined them as well, although I think more likable people were on that Warriors team than on this Brooklyn team. And last night, an amazing finish in the Sunday night game. Washington Wizards, kind of like that LSU-Texas Tech game. They're down five with, I think, 10 seconds remaining. Go down the court, hit a long three to bring it within two, steal the inbound, and then Russell Westbrook absolute nails and hits a three-pointer, and the Wizards win. And Brooklyn, they've got the offensive ability, Ian, but what's going on that defense?
Well, I'm going to use a saying from Core here. It's a situation to where you have a starting lineup, and we'll go down the list here. Let's go position by position, so that way we don't miss anybody. I like to be on the record about this. Kyrie Irving, below average defender.
Mm-hmm.
That is a fact. James Harden, underrated defender in the post, but on the perimeter and in terms of his effort, even though it has improved, it is still not at a point where you can leave him on an island against a lot of players in the league. Your small forward is not Durant. He's playing the four. Joe Harris. How many times are you going to see Joe Harris hit eight threes on one end and have 30-plus points like he did last night versus getting cooked on the defensive end because he is 6'6", mm-hmm. 208 at the small forward spot. Not a good defender. Durant is an elite defender, and I would argue that whoever you're going to start at center, they have a combination there. They've got Tony Bradley, DeAndre Jordan. I mean, they've got some guys, but there's not a lot of rim protection, not a lot of spacing. It is hyper offense, and I honestly think that Mike D'Antoni's probably watching those Nets games somewhere with a bag full of popcorn, being proud of Steve Nash for the way that they're going, because it is not 7 seconds or less. These are three dribbles or less at this point. It's ridiculous.
And there was talk about them bringing Kevin Love in a trade as well. I don't know what kind of assets the Nets have remaining, and I'm not sure their defense would get much better with Kevin Love on the team, but that's an interesting team to watch. You guys still have the Lakers as your favorite to win the title, or did you ever?
You know, I know my best friend Gene Smith, who's listening to us in Houston. Thank you for listening, brother. But he likes the Lakers. I still like the Lakers. I can't go away from them. They played a good game against Boston on Sunday. It was fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
They struggled on the road a little bit early in this road swing, but I still like the Lakers.
Yeah, Ian, how you feel about it? Are they favorite to win the title this year?
I mean, the Lakers, I would still say, are going to win the title because you still have LeBron James, who was by far and away the best player in the game. And we have seen on various nights, I think LeBron, before this last game against Boston, had three straight games of 34-plus points or more and had a 46-point performance in that, where he was 7 out of 10 from three. 6.5 threes a game, and that's attempts.
Yeah.
41.5%. Playmaking 1 year where he leads the league in assists, and now he's going to be like top 20 in three-point percentage. This guy gets better. What's the deal?
It's amazing and very fun to watch. I am glad to see Kyra Lewis getting some play down in New Orleans, the former Alabama guard, and it's fun to watch that young team grow up as well. All right, that does it. Another edition of Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. We will recap the Super Bowl next Monday night. Coming up next, Sweet Home Canabama, right here, FM Talk 106.5.